Yet another day has appeared. It's a little bit cloudy here at Holden Village, but it's nice and warm and cozy inside, and so we're going to have another discussion, and this is going to be by Barbara and Mike Burr, and so we'll be going to the fireside room here at Koinonia Building, and the lecture today will be Making It Work. So let's join Mike and Barbara for that presentation.
I'm Barbara Burr, for those of you who haven't met me, and this is Mike Burr.
And I'm late.
And he's late. we have three children between us. I have two and he has one, and we do not have our children. We have been married for 7 years, and I was trained as a teacher, and Mike is a pastor and has done individual and family counseling for about 20 years, and he also got his doctor of ministry in step families and the church, basically.
Where did you get that?
San Francisco Theological Seminary, part of Graduate Theological Union in Berkeley.
And one of the things that they ask us to do is to talk about the books that we've had them order for the bookstore. And this is Making Peace in Your Step Family by Harold Bloomfield. And it's a wonderful book. It's in soft cover, so it's not quite as expensive. And also Strengthening Your Step Family by Elizabeth Einstein and Linda Albert. We also found a nice one for children 8 to 12 years old called What to Tell Your New Step-Parent or something like that. That was in the bookstore also. There aren't as many copies as what we have ordered for these. And today our topic is Making It Work. This is not a joke, and I think that this is not a joke got into the title by accident. So now it's there. And those of you who have been with us all week, we've kind of gone over how step families are different than first-time families, and then we've gone over some different things about triangles, and we've gone over how it is from a children's point of view. And today we're going to try to wrap it all up on a really positive note on how those of you who are in step families or you're related to people in step families, how you can make it work.
One of the things that we've done is, and past few days we've focused a lot on problems, because that's kind of the nature of step families sometimes. But we don't want to give the impression at all that step families aren't worth it, that it is a negative experience, that it's something that people shouldn't do. It's we just think that step families need different tools and different approaches than first-time nuclear families.
And ask my kids, they get birthdays all week long and they get Christmas twice. they come up with all the positives.
Right.
One thing that I have back here on the whiteboard, I wrote, beat the odds, 60-70% remarriages end in divorce within 10 years. So I think by learning and growing and possibly receiving counseling that you as a step family can beat those odds. And we're going to talk about how to do that today, or one of the ways. First of all, I'm going to talk about strengthening the couple relationship. And I put that first because I think that's probably the key to making sure that the family survives, is that the couple relationship is intact. And then Mike is going to talk about
specific kinds of things that we can do in terms of building relationships with kids and integrating the family as a whole.
And as I was compiling my list of how to strengthen the couple relationship, some of these are very similar to any first-time marriage or partnership, and then some of them are specifically for step families. But I again had to remember to put pray together as number one and not number 11 or 12, And it's nice to be able to say that in Holden Village. There's many, many settings where I can't say that. But don't wait to pray together as a last resort. Do it daily. I know sometimes we forget to do that, but I try to remember to not wait and ask God for help. I try to remember to thank God for the relationship that I do have. Okay, so number two, very important is to create alone time for fun and for nurturing your relationship. So dates, vacations alone if that's possible for a few days. There's always that favorite one where they talk about hanging the sign up on the bedroom door that says don't knock unless you're bleeding or the house is on fire, which is kind of a boundary setting thing. It's a message to the children that you're taking time for your relationship. Any thoughts or additions to ways that you've created fun and nurturing?
Well, we dance. I mean, just to go out and dance. Mm-hmm. Do it at least minimum once a week. And it's great.
Releases tension, too.
And it's fun. Physical, you know, there's physical exercise in it with a swing, faster numbers, but then there's also you get physical closeness with the slower dances.
Mm-hmm.
And just time to sit and talk in between.
Be again.
And sometimes at the end of the week, we kind of wait for Friday or Saturday to come just so that we can get out.
Get out.
And the kids know. The kids know that we're going to go out.
Mm-hmm. And they respect it.
This may seem like a very simple thing, but in first-time marriages, you know, there's generally a period of a couple years where couples have time together in the home to build and develop their relationship. With step families, you come home from the wedding ceremony and boom, you're into the midst of it. You're into the thick of family. You got kids there. And so very often there isn't the space to naturally grow the relationship. So it's real important to be intentional mm-hmm. about taking time.
Actually, that's probably true for any relationship to create alone time. But it's especially important in step families. The second one is decide on general household rules as a couple. Now, Ruth Ann, to answer your question earlier, this was one of our biggest stumbling blocks, was how you were going to come up with these rules, because one person's standards can be very different than another person's standards. And clean, as we had said in other classes, clean to one person does not mean clean to the other person. And
it, what I asked you.
You had asked me what some of the biggest stressors were, why the marriage ended. And this in our relationship was one of the bigger stressors was I had my set of rules, he had his set of rules, and I'm not sure that while we did sit down and talk about them, whether we could decide and come up with them has been more of a general process over the years. And in conjunction with that is enforce the general household rules together. And as I know, and also in first-time families, that isn't always easy if one person is more of a disciplinarian or an authoritarian and the other person. What plays into this, as we said yesterday, is that with step families, it's just that everything is more magnified.
One of the ways this worked is and in the development of our own relationship created stress was we talked earlier in the week about different standards of clean. Barb would tell my daughter to clean the table. She would clean it and it would meet my standards fine. You know, there all of the big things were gone. And
the big chunks.
and then she would come back and say, "Why haven't you cleaned the table?" And then, you know, I would get defensive for my daughter and go, well, why are you picking on my daughter? You know, the table's clean. And we had, you know, talked about, you know, that, you know, the table needed to be clean. But we'd never taken the trouble to talk about what that meant, you know, until we got into the thick of it in terms of an upset with, the kids. And so it was kind of a process of you know, making the rules and then also deciding just exactly what those rules meant.
And as I read you this list, and as I was writing it down, I thought, well, it's very easy to write this down. It's very easy for me to tell you. It's very easy for you to take notes. But to actually live it is where I think we get into trouble. So I don't want to give you any kind of mistaken idea that this is very easy, but it's workable. But you have to be very intentional what you're doing.
I have a question. When we decide on the rules to enforce, that's fine. But then as a step-parent to her daughter, where do I give my authority? Because my step-parent will say, well, you're not my dad. I don't have to listen to you.
Well, that's, you know, that's one of the big clinkers in step-parent-stepchild relationships. And that authority will only come over time. And so when the step-parent first walks in the door, they don't have the authority generally to set rules unless the biological parent transfers that authority in very specific ways. And generally what we recommend is that there'll be a period of time, you know, maybe a couple years even, you know, where the biological parent is the main one who enforces the rules with their children, to give the step parent time to build a natural relationship with the stepchildren. If there are cases where, you know, the biological parent leaves the child with the step parent, then it works to be almost like a transfer of authority that happens, you know, when you have a babysitter. I'm leaving now. If you mess up with him, you have to deal with me.
But also we need to differentiate what the age of the child is. If this is a teenager, then there really are a whole other set of expectations as far as disciplining or giving rules. And my understanding of most of the reading is that if they're, you know, 16, 17, and 18, it's probably very hard for the step-parent to be more than an aunt or an uncle figure, and really doesn't have much authority with them.
And so the biological parent will need to maintain the main disciplinarian role.
That's a time when the child is rebelling against authority in general.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, the biological parent's authority as well.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
A lot
in
of
In other
them,
words, just play it cool.
That's what they're kind of saying with teenagers.
Just play it cool and let it be, and
they're leaving.
Not try to get yourself over it.
Yeah.
Just try to be a good role model.
Probably
the most important, I think.
This
just be a good example.
This too shall pass.
What I found is it's best, I think, to try and maintain a friendship, but at the same time have boundaries to them. I have respect for her, and stepchildren have respect for her there. They get along with them, those boundaries go around, and eventually there can be a helping and growing situation.
Right.
Yeah, developing that friendship though is foundational to have other authority.
And there's also kind of a formula about how long it will take to really connect with the child, and it's twice as much as the child was old when you entered the step family. So if a child was 4, it will take 8 years.
12, 24 years.
Right. So that's the point with the teenagers, is there's a point with teenagers where you have to take another role than a parental figure.
I know with his son, I've got house rules. This is my house. These are the rules. And I'm going to stick to it. Yeah. And but of course, I can't do it without his help.
Right.
Right.
Because he's starting to listen to me a little bit more, but in the beginning, I had to make sure that Dan was in there saying the same things. Because Mark was me doing it.
They're smart enough to know.
She's not my mother.
They're smart enough to know who made the rules. And Ruth, you know, accused Mike of falling into my rules because she was smart enough to know that there weren't really many rules when she was an only child in a single. You know, how many rules do you need for a 4-year-old in a single parent house? Not that many.
See, actually, it was kind of a misnomer when she said that when we got married, there were her rules and my rules. It was more like there were her rules and my non-rules.
Yeah. And, you know, part of what we recommend, which goes along with that, if financially possible, is to move into a new house. Because that takes away the territory of this is my house and it's my bathroom and you're intruding in my bathroom. And if financially possible, that is the best thing to do. What worked for us is we ended up renting out his house. We couldn't sell it, so we rented it, and it turned out to be a really a nice blessing. But
well, we lived 20 miles apart for the first 7 months. And I would traipse my kids out to his house on the weekends, and then he would come out to mine a couple times on the weekday, and I would go over there and make supper on weekdays, and then go back home again. The kids have to go to school. 7 months of that.
Yeah, that's confusing.
So we got one row.
But you know, but your point about Dan needing to be in there to communicate the rules to his son. Mm-hmm. That's really important, because the children need to get that it's our rules, and it took me a while to really integrate that and to get to the point where I was really willing to say, okay, Ruth, this isn't just Barb's rules, this is my rules too. And until I did that, there was conflict and a stress.
And a lot of triangulation that we talked about last time.
And of course, with our teenagers, we have a different dynamic going on because my two have started dating, and none of Dan's three have at all. Mm-hmm. So the rules you have for a child that has same-sex friends is different from the rules you have for a child with opposite-sex friends. Mm-hmm. So Mark is the oldest. He seems to have all his freedom, but he's out playing cards, with Darren and Eric. He's not out with Jennifer. He's nothing like that. And that's been real interesting because my kids will look and see, well, Mark's got all his freedom.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah, even though he has the older children, he can't help me because his haven't started dating yet.
Uh-huh.
And so there's a whole interesting dynamic going on here.
Need to write a book. Okay. Another way to help strengthen your couple relationship is to support one another with the children. And I guess we knew we kind of arrived last year when my daughter was going through some hard times. That she was 9 and. I told her to do something, and she came back and said, well, you're always yelling at me. You're really mad at me. And Mike stuck up for me. He goes, because your mother wasn't yelling at you. She wasn't even angry. She just told you what to do. And she looked right at Mike, and she goes, you always take her side. So we knew we'd arrived when the children were perceiving that we were united.
That we were a team.
That we were a united team, and we weren't really sticking up for one another, but it was cute. It was great that he didn't take offense at a stepchild saying that. Also, another thing to do is to expect and accept different parent, step-parent, child feelings. Needs to accept that I am probably not going to have that loving relationship with his daughter that I have with my own. And quite truly, that's been a real upsetting time in our home because, as I've said before, Mike's daughter is very bright and very verbal, and so she can articulate. And she has said to him many times, well, why doesn't Barb like me like she likes Luke and Caitlin? And he's been very, he feels real tongue-tied because it kind of took him off guard with that question. And I think he, at an early point in our marriage, he was asking, well, why don't you love my child? And so it's been nice to have the books and other people help us to remember that it really isn't the same kind of love as a biological parent.
You can,
just the way
you can respect them. You can respect them, you can care for them, you can gradually build into a loving relationship with them, but it's probably not going to be the same. Certainly there are some dynamics where it does become the same, you know, where the man never had any children and he adopts this child whose father has died, and the baby, you know, the child's 1 year old. That certainly can take on a whole nother relationship than coming in with a yours and mine situation.
And accept one another's feelings about the other's children. Is that right?
No.
Yeah.
Well, that, but, you know, accept one another's feelings toward.
Toward your own children.
Yeah.
So he needs to, Mike needs to accept that I can't really, or at this point in my life, I don't love his daughter like I love my own too. And he needs to accept that. And as with acceptance, then I think there is the freedom to continue to build toward the love.
Yeah, see, I cherish my daughter. You know, she's the most wonderful little girl in the world to me, you know. But for Barb,
That feeling isn't there,
and it probably won't be.
And to say she's the most wonderful little girl in the world probably will probably never happen for me. But as long as he can accept that I can say I like her and I can work toward caring for her and act responsibly, then that should be good enough for the biological parent. And when the biological parent puts on expectations that you marry me and you love my kid, then I don't know, but I'm kind of rebellious inside, and immediately when someone tells me I should love somebody, I find myself just going,
you know, and
back off.
One of the hard things is accepting that the best that the step-parent, step-child relationship may be able to be for a while is neutral hostility, or
Could be avoidance.
Maybe a avoidance, because you know, it's important to recognize that is a dyadic relationship, that you know, the stepchild has feelings to work out towards the step parent, and vice versa, and if there's going to be relationship, is only going to grow and develop over time.
And that is really the myth. That is one of the big myths, is the instant love myth. And we bought a book a couple years ago just because we wanted the title. The title was Love Me, Love My Kids, which is the absolute biggest myth of step families. And so we never read the book. We just have the book for the title to point out to people that's what partially ends up tearing up these families, is you have this expectation that you've got to love my kids too. And that's where you get in trouble.
Well, you could start with respect,
mm-hmm.
and then maybe trust,
mm-hmm.
and let love be for a while.
Yeah.
Right.
If love comes, fine, but respect and trust are good.
Right.
And that may be enough.
I'm going to get into some of those.
Yeah.
Those,
trust is the big one.
Yeah.
And that is... And trust is something you can work on in a way you can't work on love.
Right, right, exactly.
Trust is based on behavior,
right.
Based on history.
Yeah.
You can't do something intentionally about it.
Right, I agree with you.
In many ways, I know as a teacher that I would like my students in the end to have liked me. Mm-hmm. Let's face it, learning will happen more if kids like their teacher. But I can't work on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that respect and the trust in them, and that, and then if that happens to be a byproduct of that, good. So that was a good point.
Yeah. And if you, like you're and I know we got to move on, but as a teacher, you understand that there are certain children in the class that you click with better than
sure.
other children. That's just kind of the way it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Next point would be to work out your money matters together. And that's something that I know people choose different things. People choose separate checking accounts, separate money, because that works in their situation, and it may have to do with the children and some kind of financial issues. If one of the children, for example, with a friend of mine, one of the children had to go to a children's home and they didn't want his income playing into this, so they kept their money separated. Or people that are elderly and are remarrying oftentimes don't want to merge their money in together. They want to have a prenuptial agreement. Other times, people like us who don't have any money figure it's okay to have
matter.
One checkbook anyway.
No.
So, but whatever it is, do it together. Come up with a decision together. And I think it's very helpful to pay bills together, to know where your money's going, so that, you know, one person isn't picking up the phone bill and going, well, what? Why is this phone bill $200? And, you know, that you both have an idea of what's happening and you communicate about it.
That's actually one that really needs to be worked out largely before the marriage happens.
Do you do some counseling with that?
Yeah, in premarital counseling, I focus on that as one of the dynamics.
Another thing that you need to keep in the forefront of your mind is that the couple is the primary long-term relationship. If you can keep it together, and that's your goal, is to keep it together, the children will be moving on.
And also in the terms of the security of the home environment, you know, while the children may do stuff to try and divide you, to divide and conquer, as it were, I'm really convinced that overall, if there's a strong couple relationship, that provides the foundation for all of the other relationships going on in the home. And if that relationship is as strong, the children will ultimately feel more secure and happier.
And you do get into a bit of a double bind if you are having an argument. The children sometimes go back to that, you know, that thought, oh no, they're going to get divorced, just like, you know. But again, as we've stressed in here, you need to be able to fight fairly, and you do conflict, and you need to conflict. And sometimes you will conflict in front of the children, and that's the thing where you need to reassure them that, yes, we do have conflicts. No, we are not going to get a divorce. And we've heard, you know, little rumors flying around the house about, oh no, they're going to get a divorce, and what's going to happen to us? And that's scary for them, because they've already been through something once, and they don't want that again.
But if you're able to conflict openly and in a constructive manner, that can also be real good role modeling for how to deal with emotions, you know, rather than swallowing stuff. If you can deal with it and resolve it.
And if you get to a point where it's too overwhelming, I tell everyone to seek counseling. And we certainly did.
Get help.
Unfortunately, we live in a small community, and we were at a loss to find anybody that was a step parent and was a good therapist. And that was partially what motivated Mike to get his doctor of ministry in it, because now in our two communities, he is the one that the other counselors refer to when they have a client that's in a step-family relationship. They refer to him. And I caution you to please make sure that the person knows the dynamics of step-families, because you as a parent can often be shamed if the person doesn't understand about step families. And one counselor told me it was just fine that Mike was spending all of his time doting on his daughter. You know? And I don't think I ever went back after that, but.
And what was the reason that this person said that?
Because the issue was him siding with her, you know, why are you picking on my kid? And so I was talking about boundaries, and the counselor came back and said, it's okay if he dotes on his daughter. And she was missing the point of the triangulation.
It's as if she was thinking of, you know, these are two separate families that sort of are just going to coexist.
Yeah, she didn't really have a concept
of blended
family. Of step family. She didn't hadn't read anything on it, and so that's why I really caution you to know who you're going to see. And also, I think you overheard me saying earlier that a lot of times people are like Dear Abby is always saying, "Well, go see your clergy person to get counseling." And as I was saying to David, that a lot of clergy people have no idea what it's about in a step family either.
But a lot of clergy people think that they're in a position to counsel instead of refer.
Right, exactly. And as you found out in your doctorate that...
In too many areas, this is one of them.
Yeah, as you found out in your doctorate that there were many pastors that did not have an understanding at all, so...
Most,
okay, even more.
Probably 95%.
Another thing to do...
That I surveyed had a minimal understanding of step-family dynamics and were unprepared to deal with them.
Yeah.
How many were willing to refer then?
A few, yeah. Very few did anything unique in terms of premarital work with step families,
which is part of the key.
Yeah, which
it is true that people naturally go to their pastor, mm-hmm. and that's a fine thing. But you know, pastors need to be encouraged to see themselves as referrers,
right.
Yeah.
Often even more than as counselors.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel as a pastor, I mean, some of the greatest things I've done in terms of helping people has been helping them get help.
Right. You know your resources.
I mean, helping refer rather than try to deal with it myself. I mean, you know, some of my most satisfying mm-hmm. dealings with people have been that, nothing I did myself. Mm-hmm. Or maybe met a couple times in to determine what really they needed and to find the referral.
Yeah, and you have the community network that they may not have to know who to go to. Go
that's
to.
Right, that's exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Or you should have a community
network. Hopefully.
You should be in touch.
Another thing to do is to join a support group. That's really pivotal as we talked about in stages last week. That's pivotal in... I think it's the third and fourth stage where you might very well be seeking a support group. If there are no support groups, if you live in a smaller community, you can start your own support group. There are materials from the Step Family Association that have books that line out exactly what to do in what questions to talk about. And
you don't have to be an expert to start a support group. You know, if you can read, you can mm-hmm.
generally pick up enough, as you go along. The kind of mutual sharing that happens in support groups can be very, very beneficial.
And most often your church will allow you to use the building to host that group. It's not anything you'd have to have in your home if you didn't want to. Another thing, which again is important everywhere in life, is practice good communication skills. And we talked about taking a class together that worked on communication skills.
So that
very
you
important
have
to take it together.
Language.
I've got to hurry up. Learn to fight fair. And then just a couple other things. Send love notes and flowers. Take naps. Go on second honeymoons. Celebrate your anniversary. I think that's a real big thing. Don't let that August 1st just go by. Oh, well, it's 7 years. Isn't that nice?
Well, the first anniversary that my son and wife took ended up in disaster because she started bringing up everything that was in her mind.
Which is very, very often what happens on the dates, which is what they suggest why you go on dates every week. So, because that's what happens, is people finally get away from the kids and they just let loose with it all.
And before they can share affection, they have to share the problems.
I'm just appalled at the statistic that most married couples spend 15 minutes a day talking to each other. I am absolutely appalled at that. I don't care how many kids you have. We make dinner together. We spend a half an hour. We kick the kids out of the kitchen and we make dinner together, and that takes at least a half an hour. That's where we find the talking time.
This husband and wife combination, he loves to cook. When they were married, she was in the kitchen and she didn't want anybody else.
Well, we find that to be, that's how we find that kind of time together, is sharing chores. It's very easy. Well, you do this and I'll do that, and it gets done a lot faster. It's true. But then you haven't found that time where you can work and talk together. And also, I'm sure you've heard of the idea of saying three things at the end of the day of what you appreciated about the other person. If you can kind of incorporate that and acknowledge and thank one another. And thank one another consistently. And I think that goes toward a long way to building goodwill in your relationship. Yeah. There you go.
Hey, what time?
It's only 10 after 1.
Okay.
So we started late.
Okay, are there questions or comments about the kinds of things that Barb has been talking about in terms of maintaining strong couple relationship? Basic is making time, so you're not letting yourself get so wrapped up in the circumstances that you forget to pay attention to one another. There are also a number of things that we can do with the kids in order to build relationship and build a sense of integration and cohesiveness, in sense of inclusion in the family. Small group theorists talk about processes that happen in groups, and one of the first processes that happens in any group of people is the process of inclusion. If people don't feel included, there's going to be problems in the family. And part of feeling included is having a sense of power and having a sense of control over one's life. And we sometimes forget that children need to have that sense of control too. Certainly not as much as adults do, but they need to have the sense that they have some influence in what happens in the family. So I'd like to suggest that there are four A's that we can pay attention to that will assist us in developing what we were talking about earlier in the terms of trust between family members. And the four A's are attention, acceptance, appreciation, and affection. It's hard to build relationship without spending some time on it. That's where attention comes in. One of the big deficits that happens in step-parent, step-child relationships is they don't know each other. You come in the door from the wedding ceremony, and very often there's no relationship there, or not much relationship. And you're coming into a situation where you're spending time living together. So one of the key things that step-parents can do with step-children to build relationship is to regularly spend some time with them. Make an appointment once a week to do something that the kid would like to do. Take a walk together. Go bike riding. Go have an ice cream cone. Do something that where you can start to build relationship.
Now, when you were mentioning that they don't know each other, well, that also holds true for. That's the way there are a lot of problems in schools and society in general, because people don't know each other. And there's no caring built up when there's people don't know each other.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that, about schools, like I teach in a real big school, and there is that sense of, I don't care about you because I don't know you.
Yeah. And the only way people know each other is by
spending time.
Is it? And I feel bad for you as a teacher, because the pressures are put on you to spend your time doing what?
Well, we're supposed to teach, and how much time do we have to
build relationships?
Yeah, sure, I have a small advisor group, but I got 150 kids total. I don't have 20 some kids in the morning for that.
And the free time you might have, you're supposed to be spending it alone. On the mechanics and the structure and the curriculum, not with.
But this is, I've been on a class before, and there was, and this is a big thing, is, and it's our society. Look at the crime rate, and people don't know each other. Mm-hmm. And there's neighborhoods, people don't know each other.
Right.
So they commit crimes.
If you know people, you don't steal from them very easily.
Not as much.
Yeah. Another way that you can spend time, one of the crunches in the most families, and especially in step families, is finding adequate time. You have to be real intentional about it. Kids are going back and forth between two homes very often, so there isn't as much time in one house, to do all of these wonderful things. So you have to be intentional. One of the things that you can do is to do a chores together, work together, side by side, to give you some time to talk and to relate.
also gives you it also gives you time to learn skills, and that's where Ruth and I have done some better connecting is cooking. And I'm always amazed that she doesn't seem to know how to do a lot of the cooking chores, and she's really cute. I said, well, didn't your mom cook with you? And she goes, well, you guys have a microwave and she doesn't, so I haven't learned how to cook over there. So her idea was that it was easier to prepare food at our house, and therefore she would do that. But anyway, we've done a lot of things like making Father's Day dinner together, and that's been good because we learn skills, and it helps me to learn how to teach in a patient manner, and it's a fun time because the goal is for something that we're both working toward.
Okay, other ways to pay attention. You know, go to the soccer game. You know, go to gymnastics and watch. You know, go to activities that the kids are involved in. You know, even though it's really boring sometimes. yeah, track meets. You don't have a real strong sense of affection or connection for the stepchildren, and to go sit through the whole school concert so you can watch these kids that you don't have a real strong connection with do one number. I mean,
but they know you're there.
Yeah, but they know that you're there, and it's surprising what a difference that makes. Learning to listen. Step parents can be an alternative ear at times. If you learn to listen, it's like with anybody. It's hard to make contact unless you take the time to really listen and really hear who that other person is. You can find special jobs that will give the kids special recognition and compliments. When I was writing that down, what I was thinking about was toilets and Caitlin. For some reason, this child liked the job, or fastened on to the job of cleaning the toilets. Which was great. And boy, she gets a lot of attention and affirmation over that one,
It's like you wanted to take a picture of this little kid in these huge gloves.
Yeah.
And he's scrubbing with the pumice stuff.
You probably feel like, some Cinderella's, evil step-parents. But the kid liked it.
I'm not sure if she was sitting here, she'd agree with you. She liked it, she put energy into it.
Yeah. Luke does the lawn, he likes doing that. It's a way of getting a attention. Another thing to do is to plan special occasions. Special celebrations, activities. So those are ways of giving kids attention, which gives them the basic message that you're interested, and creates the time for making relationship. Acceptance. We need to create a sense of acceptance with the kids, and in that sense, it's real important to treat all of the children in the home respectfully. You know, if you treat, you know, if there's special treatment, there will be resentment over it. And they will pick up on it real fast. You know, they'll finally attune to that. Focus on gifts, on what the children can do, as opposed to what they can't do.
There's a cute.
Yes, right towards the back, I think.
There it is.
Yeah. This joke here of the stepmother trying to find, you know, something positive to say, and they're sitting at the breakfast table here, and the boy has the boom box up to his ear, and it's blaring, and well, I guess it's the stepfather, right? Poor Brian, but he's saying, "I said that boombox sure is building up your biceps." You know, so you know, finding strengths. It's interesting. In several other sessions that have been going on these couple weeks. In Jody's sessions on the cities, on Ted Grosser's sessions on doing foreign aid, they've talked about the importance of focusing on the strengths of communities if you're going to be able to build in those communities.
Rebuild.
Or rebuild. And it's the same in the step family. If you focus on the deficits, on what's wrong with it, it's going to be real hard to build. But if you focus on the strengths of the individuals involved and accept and affirm those, then you create a foundation on which you can build. Real important to avoid comparing, you know, as in first-time nuclear family, it's real destructive to compare children. You know, why aren't you getting the kinds of grades that your older brother is, or why aren't you getting the kinds of grades that your younger sister is? You compare children, and that sets them against each other, which becomes destructive. We talked about encouraging appropriate expression of feelings and learning to respond to other people's feelings without judgment. And that's important. Be interested. Best way to show acceptance is to be interested in who this little person is. Find out. Don't assume that there's not much there, because it's amazing what kids all will come up with. Also important to not confuse accepting the child with accepting misbehavior. If you just accept everything, you're going to be in trouble. You need to set your personal boundaries. And I think that's part of what you were talking about when you were saying, these are the house rules. And
also from a woman's perspective, trying not to get into roles here too much, but we have been socialized that the house is our domain. And men have been socialized that their work is their domain, and that women have power in the home and men have power at work. That's how we've been socialized, regardless of how we try to live out our own lives. And so you said those were your house rules, and the joke is, you know, they're Barb's rules, you know. And when the child misbehaves, to me as a woman, it's almost a little bit more than the rules are being broken, but it's almost a personal thing because I've created this home in my mind, and I've created the kitchen, you know, the decorations in the kitchen and how everything was set up really honestly was done by me. And so when there's misbehavior, you know, food being thrown on the floor or you know, something like that, then it almost moves into a little bit more of an affront to me and my territory and who I am. And that is a task I need to work out of. But I think that's where part of my trouble with misbehavior was becoming, because the misbehavior was happening in my domain, in my area of power and control, if you want to call it that without sounding like Hitler or something. But I think that's how women have been socialized, and I think maybe that pulls in a little bit to the wicked stepmother myth.
Does that fit with you at all? Or?
Sort of. We come from a similar thing where, you know, it's kind of like the civilization process we're working on. You know, the dishes are brought into the kitchen and rinsed, you know.
But if it doesn't happen, you don't feel like your house is clean.
Well, and there's six people living in this house, and we simply cannot leave messes. We can't have all the dishes sitting down in Mark's room because I only have six bowls.
But if there were six,
we're in a box someplace. I mean, we still have.
And you probably care about that more than the males in the family.
Probably.
And I care about it.
I've got nice things.
Yeah.
Most of the house is furnished with my stuff.
Yeah.
My nice things, which I've kept nice.
It's your and it's your domain in a sense, regardless of whether you work outside of the home or not. And I think that's where the misbehavior sometimes affects the stepmother more than the misbehavior.
I'm not sure that division is inevitable, but
right.
I think it's important to be in tune with where you have those feelings.
Exactly.
I mean, in our family, I do more cleaning.
So,
in the kitchen, I do more cooking, but then it would mean that I would need to be in tune with if I felt personally offended because of dirt.
Right, and I probably shouldn't have cast it into male, female. You're right. It's just...
Usually is.
Usually,
right.
But not
usually
always.
Usually is, but it doesn't have to be. But even if it's the other way, or even if a child feels particularly at home in the kitchen for some reason, and that happens too, to be aware of that issue, because that issue remains regardless of
and so the misbehavior moves on to another level beyond misbehavior,
right.
If you're not aware of that.
It's a personal hurt.
Affront, or
You act defensively.
So we don't accept misbehavior then. Can we put that in a positive?
Well, you don't confuse accepting the person with accepting misbehavior. Separate the doer and the deed.
Which is not always easy.
No. Yeah, which isn't always easy. That's
it's a fine line, and that's where the fear and trembling comes in.
Yeah.
And, you know, if my child lies to me, I get mad that they lied, but then, you know, but they're still my child, and so there's this basic bonding. Now, when his child lies to me, I find myself getting twice as mad than when my child lies to me, because there isn't that basic bonding. And I think that's part of the core of the misbehavior problem, too.
Okay, other comments? Okay.
How are we in time?
Sure.
We're done then.
Okay, just the last two are appreciation and a affection. Need to share those two. Use verbal statements to say, I appreciate this. I like you. Give a appreciation notes. Focus on small steps, not just on the final end. In terms of affection, recognize that it comes slowly. begin with verbal appreciation before physical. You know, that needs to be a slow process. You know, give the verbal affection, you know, I like you, you know, and then maybe a touch on the shoulder. See how that's accepted, you know, before you try giving hugs and stuff. Be sure to give unconditional acceptance and affection too. You know, besides just, you know, I like it when you do this. Is, you know, I like living with you. And then be patient, and hopefully it works out.
We probably should wrap it up.
Yep. Okay.
There's more to it, but.
So there's always more to it. Read, learn, and charge into it. Thank you for coming.
Yeah, thanks.